Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Two Footed Tackle Podcast. I'm your host, Darius Matakos. We're back again. And before I start, as you can probably tell by the title and the thumbnail, if you're on YouTube, this will be a podcast themed predominantly about the team that I'm currently wearing, and that's the Socceroos. But before we get onto that, I hope everyone is well. I hope everyone has enjoyed their week since we last spoke, heading into Feb, second month of the year. It's gone by in a flash. It's pretty fucked, actually. So there you go. January transfer window is closed. So no real big signing as well happened. So not a lot to cover there. But hope everyone's well. Hope everyone has enjoyed their week. For those in Australia, it was fucking hot yesterday. And by yesterday, I mean Sunday. Across the board, I think it was pretty hot. It was 38 in Melbourne, so that's hot. Enjoyed the sun, which is great. Somehow not tanned or burnt. I was in the sun, I'm not tanned or burnt. I don't know how that works, but no, is what it is. Hope everyone's well. Before we kick things off, I implore you all to subscribe to the Super Attack Podcast on YouTube. Make sure you like the podcast, notification bell, share it around, it does mean more than the world. And then, of course, on all the audio platforms, Two Foot Tackle Podcast, Anchor, TikTok, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, and Spotify. Jump the shark a little bit there. 5-star review, follow, like, all that good stuff. And then, of course, the socials, Two Foot Tackle Podcast, TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter for your Two Foot Tackle Podcasting needs. So yeah, I want to fuck all the pleasantries off at the start, because I'm obviously going to be speaking about what happened on Saturday morning quite a lot this podcast, and I want to touch on some other things as well. So I'm just going to crack straight into the Aussies at the Asia Cup. And then if we got time, which I hope we do have time, I don't want this to be too long, we'll do some A-League content, and then some obviously Premier League stuff as well, because there's got a couple of things I want to speak about. Now, let's start the Socceroos. I was really tempted to record at least this portion of the pod on Saturday, after I woke up, because obviously the game started at 2:30 Australia time, obviously went all the way to extra time. I ended up falling asleep at about 6:00. And I was really tired when I got up at about 11 o'clock. So I was, do I record? I mean, there's bright space to record. I decided against it because I was also very emotional still at the time. And like I said, there was no way I was recording. On a 38 degree day. I would rather enjoy my day and enjoy the sun. Whereas now it's, I think, 20 and it's raining outside. So, I think the weather outside has really dictated the mood here. Where do we start? The Socceroos fall at the quarterfinal stage of the Asian Cup against South Korea 2-1. Socceroos took the lead just before halftime with Craig Goodwin. They held on valiantly until the 96th minute, in which Lewis Miller brings down Sung Hyun-min and Hwan Hee-chan, or in the box, and Hwan Hee-chan scores the penalty. And then in just before the second half of extra time, or just before the end of the first half of extra time, Sung Hyun-min wallops a free kick into the top corner, and that was all she wrote. The game was basically sealed just before the halftime of extra time, where Aidan O'Neill gets sent off, Australia down to 10 men, and that is all she wrote. The South Korea advanced to play Jordan in the semis, in which they should win that. And the winner of that game goes on to play, if I'm not mistaken, either Saudi Arabia or Qatar. Is it Saudi Arabia or Qatar? It is. Oh no, Iran or Qatar. Sorry. Iran or Qatar. That's it. So, yes. Oh, boy, where do we start? I'm not going to go through the game, because those who are going to listen to this probably know what happened in the game. I'm just going to give my reaction to it. I made a tweet. This was my tweet after the game. I made two tweets after the game. I think they capitalized my thoughts quite well, and that's probably something that we can bounce the conversation off. At 5:23 in the morning, so I didn't fall asleep for another 40 minutes after this. So many thoughts, so many emotions, so many moments, so many wrong decisions. Absolutely heartbroken. And probably the basis I want to touch on, something I want to touch on a lot in this podcast, is when your system relies on individual brilliance, if and when those individuals don't perform, your system gets exposed. And subsequently, Robbie Slater came out and backed Arnold and basically said that the result wasn't his fault. My response to that, can Arnie be solely blamed for Duke's misses, for Duke's missed chances and Miller's fouls? No. Can he be blamed for an abundance of horrendous decisions that led to those moments being as consequential as what they were? Absolutely. He's not 100% to blame, but he's absolutely complicit. Yeah, it was a really, really heartbreaking result. Really heartbreaking result. If we take a look at the team that we played, it was a good team. I think the team was okay. I thought this was the team that we probably... I would have liked to see a little bit more creative flair, especially starting the game. I thought the midfield was workmanlike, which is probably what you need against a team like South Korea, in fairness. But I also would have liked to see us go punch for punch a little bit with them. It was of course Atkinson starting his first game of the tournament. I think our right back and played one of the best games of his career. Suter, Rouse, Beich, obviously right in goal, and then the midfield three of Metcalf, Backus, and Irvine, and then Boyle and Goodwin either side of Mitch Duke up front. The subs: Aidan O'Neill comes on, Riley McGregor comes on, Yordi Boss, Lewis Miller, Cam Burgess, and Bruno Fornaroli. A couple of unused substitutes, in which we probably could have used the likes of Silvera, Tilio, or Yenji, but is what it is. It was, it was really, really discouraging, that result. I thought, on the whole, and I thought for the most part, we played fine. I think the approach to the game was incredibly risky, and what I mean by that is, while we didn't go for it, we played a style of football that, if it worked, great. If it didn't, it would be very, a lot would have been blamed on Arnie if we weren't able to get a result. And we didn't win, and we weren't able to get a result. So you need to look at Arnie. You need to look at the approach of the game. We approached the game in a, I wouldn't say cowardice way, but we approached the game in the way of, we were a reactive football team. We were reactive. We weren't on the front foot. We weren't making South Korea think. We were letting them punch us, and then we'd counterpunch. And I think we are a good enough team to not do that. We are a good enough team with good enough players to punch first. And the way that South Korea have been playing this tournament hasn't been great. They went to extra time against Saudi Arabia. Was it extra time? Was it pens? I think it might have been pens. They went all the way, is what I'm saying, against Saudi Arabia. Yeah, it was pens. They were obviously would have been relatively cooked. We had 2 days extra rest. I was annoyed that we didn't go on the front foot, but you can't say that it didn't work. For 86 minutes. And I'll touch on why 86 is a specific number later on. For 86 minutes, we were winning. For 86 minutes, we were fine. We were winning for half of those minutes, and we were okay. And it does come down to moments of the two chances of Duke. And I'll touch on that now. This is going to be really incoherent because I still don't have a really coherent train of thought, but Duke's missed chances. Now, they're both guilt edge. Absolutely. Like there's no kind of hiding from it. There's no sitting here and saying, oh, but X, Y, Z and whatever. No. You score those. Non-negotiable. You score both of those chances. And he knows that. Everyone knows that. Everyone on the planet knows that. You score those chances. It is like an absolute kind of no excuses. You score. The first one, I reckon Boyle should have put in... I think you can't really judge the header from Boyle too much because I think he did well to actually get enough power on the header to make the goalkeeper parry it. Has to score the rebound. He doesn't, and it falls to Duke. And he panicked. He shat himself. He panicked. If he had just let the ball bounce or let the ball come down a little bit, take a touch and score because he had so much time. I'm sitting here saying how we're in the semi-final of an Asian Cup and we are a good chance of going through to the final. And then the second one, I mean, he does well to raid it. He does well to get there. But again, you have to score. And it was, yeah, one of the moments where it can be so different if he scores. And then that was obviously one of the moments. I think obviously the other moment is the Lewis Miller tackle on Sun. Just stupid. Like, Lewis Miller didn't play a good game. Lewis Miller didn't play a good game regardless, right? He was not good when he came on. And he shouldn't have come on. Atkinson was playing one of the best games of his career. He was playing exceptional. Like, so good. He was playing so well. And Miller comes on. He was nervy. And then it was nervy in possession. Gave away a few sloppy passes. And then that just needless. Needless. Absolutely needless tackle. Sun wasn't going anywhere. He was shown onto his weaker foot of the two. Wasn't going anywhere. Even if he did manage to get past Miller, he was covered. Rash, just not a good tackle. Punished, goal, from that point on, game over. And for whatever reason, despite the fact that they had 2 days less rest, and they went to extra time, they went all the way to penalties, we looked spent. Like, we looked absolutely knackered. We looked done. Somehow, like, watch the back end of the extra time, we couldn't run. The only person that could run was Bruno, and that's because he just came on. Couldn't run, couldn't work, couldn't track back. It was just hoping that something happened, and nothing did. Yeah, so many moments, so many wrong decisions. And it was, like, and I think here, when your system relies on individual brilliance, and when those individuals don't perform, your system gets exposed. I couldn't have put it better myself, even though that's what I said. That is my ultimate kind of train of thought right now, is Arnie's way of playing football relies heavily on our players being ready to go. There is no plan B, and there is no kind of safety net of, if our players aren't performing, the system gets us over the line because we're well drilled and we know what we're doing and we know where to position ourselves and we know patterns of play that if we keep doing, eventually one will work. There's none of that. There is almost no instruction. It's just run and tackle and defend. That's kind of all I can imagine the instructions being. The team selection and the substitutions in particular, I thought were average, bad even, like bad. He brings on, I mean, I'll touch on the squad selection as well, but the subs that he brought on O'Neill and McGree and Boss. He brought O'Neill and McGree on straight away. O'Neill for Backus and McGree for Metcalf. Okay, they're straight swaps, essentially. Maybe you're being a little bit more attacking with McGree, that's fine. And then he subs off Goodwin and Atkinson. Why? Why? Why the fuck has he done that? I'm sorry for being aggressive, but Goodwin and Atkinson were our two best players. The assister to the goal scorer, they were our two best players. Atkinson was playing the game of his life. The game of his life. He was our highest rated player, according to FotMob. And he was a defender, right? The game of his life. He was exceptional. Running up and down, being creative in possession. The cross for Goodwin's goal was superb. He was so good. And you bring him off for Lewis Miller, who hadn't played a minute in the tournament to date. And then you take Goodwin off for a left back. Just start Boss on a left back, or just sub him off for Beige. What happened here was, this put us in a very shit position where at this stage we had five defenders on the pitch. We had five defenders on the pitch with a DM and Jackson Irvine, who's basically a DM as well. So we had eight. We had, at this stage, seven defenders on the pitch. Seven defensively minded players on the pitch. At 1-0 up. Okay. And then he goes with, and then what does he go with after? Then he goes with Burgess for Boyle. This one, I cannot explain. I cannot explain for the life of me. Did he not realize that extra time was a possibility? As soon as he makes that sub, if that goes to game goes to extra time, game over, done. We have one sub left. And what did he do? He brought a striker on for a striker. So we went into extra time with eight defensively minded players on the pitch. There was no way we were going to win that game. There was no way. It is the absolute definition of tactical ineptitude. Pure and utterly, it was either ineptitude or ignorance. I don't know. Like, I get it. So, he did the same thing against Denmark at the World Cup. He did the same thing against Denmark in the World Cup, where he brought on a defender for an attacker, and we played with basically six defenders. But that's okay, because there's no extra time in that game. It's 90 minutes do or die. That's it. No breaks. So, I get that. I get that kind of train of thought. When you know that extra time is a possibility, why are you risking? If he had just kept the same team, right? If he had kept the same team, if we'd gone to extra time, that's okay, because we've still at least got three attackers on the pitch. And then you can sub on someone like Yazbek for a centre back, move back to your four at the back, play Yazbek, or move McGree slightly higher, play Yazbek in midfield or something like that, and then all of a sudden you've got something going here, right? But no. Or you could bring Yazbek on for Bage, move Boss to left back, move McGree out wide, and then play Yazbek in the middle for extra run in the midfield. Something like that. How does he not think of that? How does he sit there and go, I'm going to bring on a centre back and hope that we hold on for 10 more minutes? When South Korea were peppering. They were eventually, if the game had gone long enough, they were eventually going to score. And it was ironic that one of his substitutions caused the error. I just don't get it. I don't get the tactical ineptitude of it. How is he? The state of the team, that was the other point I was going to make. The state of the team going into extra time was just shit. There was no way we were winning that game. Absolutely no. The only way we're going to win is if we held on and we went to pens. That was it. And I didn't care that both goals came from set pieces, because they were going to come eventually. Like, they were peppering hard enough that eventually they were going to score. And we offered nothing going forward. As soon as Boyle comes off, that's it. All of our attacking exploits completely nullified or completely dead as soon as Boyle comes off. Because we only have two outlets. We have two outlets and one of them is a left back. McGree's not really an outlet player, because he's a player that will get onto the ball and look for the outlet, right? Our outlets were Boss and Duke, and one of them's a left back, and one of them isn't mobile enough to beat a man and to get past the man. It is just absolute tactical ineptitude. That's all it is. Tactical ineptitude. And that's fine. That is okay, because not every fucking coach can be Pep Guardiola, but he shouldn't be in the position that he's in. He should not be national team coach if he's that inept. Shouldn't be. Maybe I'm being harsh, but I don't care. This is one of the more talented squads we've got, and he didn't even take our best squad. And that's the other point I was going to get to. How different would our tournament's fortunes have looked if we had someone like a Robertson, if we had someone like an Irukunda off the bench, or a Kual, or a Volpato, or someone like that, to come off the bench and change something, or to start in the middle of the park and change something. I don't get it. It seems like he approached this tournament the exact same way that he approached the World Cup, which I think is just so wrong, because it's two completely different tournaments with two completely different levels of opposition and two completely different mindsets heading into the tournament. The World Cup, we just need to get out of the group. In this tournament, a lot of people thought that we could win it and wanted us to win it. Semi-finals minimum. Right, and if we win on the weekend, we versus Jordan. I know Jordan beat us in the last Asian Cup, but God, you'd like to think that we'd be able to get the job done. And then we go into the final against Iran or Qatar, and then who knows? All to play for, backs against the wall, doesn't matter, right? In terms of form and performance, doesn't matter. I the approach to the tournament was so wrong. Was wrong. From squad selection to team selection to tactics to the mental approach of games was all wrong. All wrong. Horrendous. So bad. And it frustrates me because we're so talented. We are really talented. And this is what I said last week. We have extremely talented players that played like dog shit. And I'm not saying it's down to them because it's not. Because Riley McGree will go back to Middlesbrough and kill it, I can guarantee. Jackson Irvine will go back to St. Pauli and kill it. Bruno's going to come back into the A-League and score 3 goals in his return game, I can guarantee you. But as soon as they go to the national team, they're shit. They play like shit. So there has to be a common denominator there. And they've been bad ever since the World Cup. They've been bad ever since the World Cup. It has not been convincing at all. I just struggle. I struggle because I care so much. And if I can see it, how can he see it? If hundreds of thousands of Australians can see it, that the approach was wrong, the subs were wrong, the tactics were wrong, how can he not see it? I guess that's all I kind of wanted to say about that. In terms of that game, I just don't know. If you look at the stats, we had 5 big chances and we missed all 5 of them according to FOTMob. We had 13 shots to their 12, but only 27% possession. The performances have not been sustainable, and it finally caught up to us. It was not a sustainable way of playing football, and it's a cowardice way of playing football. It is. It just is a cowardice way of playing football with a team as good as what we've got. If we were India, and we sat back and played the way that we played today, or on the weekend, or across this tournament, then fine, I'd get it, because our team isn't good enough. Or if we were a Tajikistan or whatever, right? I get it, because the teams aren't good enough, but our team is good enough. Our team is good enough, and they've shown that they are good enough. They've shown that the individuals on the pitch are more than good enough. So why? Why has he set up like a coward again? Again. Comparatively, we're one of the... This is what shits me the most. He has approached the World Cup and the Asian Cup the exact same, right? And the fan base's reaction to both those tournaments differ, and they differ for this reason. It's because comparatively, at the World Cup, we're bad. We are not a good team at the World Cup in comparison to the other teams that are in there. In the Asian Cup, we are. In the Asian Cup, we're probably the 4th best team in it, right? And we didn't come up against an elite team until the quarterfinals, right? So when you approached 2 different tournaments in which you are comparatively at different levels in either tournament the same way, there's your issue. There is your issue. And it shows other 2 things. It shows just pure tactical ineptitude, that Graham Arnold does not know how to set up his team in a way to dominate games and to dominate games consistently, or it's ignorance, that he thinks this is the best way for us to go about it, or he's scared. And either of those things, whatever the reason, that proves that he should not be in charge of this team. Because our players individually are good. They are good, and at the very least, they are better than what they've been able to perform at across this tournament. So the common denominator has to be the coach, has to be the tactical setup, has to be the approach to games. That's all it has to be. Because it can't be anything else. Because the squad isn't overly different. Like the performances of all, like, the players, our best players at club level are also our best players at national team level as well, right? For the most part. Yeah, you can say some squad selection issues. No Robertson was a head scratcher and players like this, right? But at the end of the day, if we did have an Alex Robertson, if we did have an Irukunda, if we did have a Sakari or whoever, it wouldn't have made a difference. Because the approach still would have been the same. And these players would have been dragged down to that level again. How he has approached 2 different tournaments where we are comparatively so different in terms of us compared to the opposition the same way, I don't know. I don't get it. It would be like If I lived in a one bedroom council flat and I ordered a king size and I bought a king size bed, I bought 14 flat screen TVs, I bought a Lamborghini, like for that house, and then I also did the same for a 18 bedroom mansion. Like the approach to living in two different houses is the same when it shouldn't be. The approach that we've gone, like, it's a really weird analogy. I hope it kind of came across. I think I said it in the wrong order, but that's besides the point. The approach of two different tournaments in which we're comparatively at different levels has been the same, is what I'm trying to get at. And it's shit. It's shit. So I've gone on a rant about the tournament. Failure. Absolute failure. Like not even a debate whether or not it's a failure right now. Like, yeah. Absolute failure. Absolute failure. So, just need to write some down for editing, Ari. Yeah, absolute failure. Non-negotiable. Absolute failure. You cannot sit here and tell me that a quarterfinals exit at an Asian Cup tournament is a success, because we got knocked out at the quarterfinal stage 4 years ago, and that wasn't a success. And our squad is far better than what it was 4 years ago. So, what more do you want? What more do you want? It is a failure. It is a shit result, like really bad. And there needs to be repercussions. There needs to be repercussions. And those repercussions start and end at the gaffer. He can't continue. He can't continue. It would be a slap in the face. It would be a slap in the face of all the fans who have to put up with watching this. It would be a slap in the face of all the players who deserve better than this. Players like Riley McGree, players like Jordy Boss, players like Jackson Irvine, everyone in the squad who can perform at such a better level than what they've been performing at because of the approach that they've been forced to go for, because of the way that they've been forced to play the game. I don't know, like, he has to go. He has to go. And it breaks my heart, because after the World Cup, mate, I loved him. Like, and a part of me still will always love him because of that tournament and what he's been able to do. And it's the die hero, live long enough to see yourself become a villain, right? Arnold was a villain. The Asian Cup in 19 was bad. Went to this World Cup, got there by the skin of his teeth, and then performed and exceeded expectations. And he should have realized that this is it. This is as far as I've got been able to get this team. He should have left then. He should have left post that World Cup. But for whatever reason, he didn't. You can call it arrogance. You can call it ego. You can call it securing his family's future because of the money that would have been offered at him. Whatever you want to call it. He's still there. And I think he's contracted for a couple more years. I can almost guarantee you he'll take the under-23s to the Olympics. If he fails then, has to go. Has to. Like, non-negotiable. It's arguably non-negotiable right now that he has to go. And I think he does. But I don't hate the guy. I'm not going to sit here and abuse him. I'm not going to sit here and call him a shit bloke because I don't know him. And from all accounts, he's probably a great guy. And he's been able to get the Socceroos team to playing at levels which I haven't seen him play in a long time in terms of at the World Cup, right? And he's given me that moment of when Lecky scored and he was in charge and he gave me that moment. So I'll be forever grateful for him. But he needs to go because this squad has outgrown him. And we've seen he cannot set up a squad this talented with the appropriate tactics. He can't. And that's not his fault. He's just not that good of a manager, which is fine. Which is fine. Not everyone can be Pep. But acknowledge that and acknowledge the players you have at your disposal far outweigh your ability to manage them and leave, in my opinion. That's my opinion. And my opinion isn't fucking fact. So I'm not going to sit here and say that if he doesn't, they're wrong, because he could stay in charge and then we could win the Olympics, get gold at the Olympics. Right? Well, he could do that. It won't happen, but he could. His future is, it's bleak, very bleak, and as in the future of the Socceroos right now is bleak if he stays in charge, because I don't see a drastic change in football overnight. I mean, when you look at the solid football that we play, yeah, we're good. Defensively, we're okay. In transition, we're pretty good. When we dominate the ball and when we have a lot of possession, we're toothless. We're flaccid. There's nothing. Nothing. Tipota. Right? If I want to start speaking Greek. There is nothing going forward when we start dominating the ball. In transition, we're fine. Right? We're great. But when we've got players who are better at playing, that are better than playing transition football, I'm just going to shrug my shoulders and say, what more do you want? And what more needs to happen? I am very sad right now. And I was even worse on Saturday. At the end of the day, I think without sounding really harsh and without abusing Graham Arnold right now, our squad is too good for him. His tactical ability and his managerial ability is not good enough to coach a squad of this level. That's all it is. That's all it is. And that's fine, because not everyone can be Pep Guardiola. Not everyone can be Jurgen Klopp, right? And I'm not saying the Socceroos are at a level where we deserve to be managed by coaches like that. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that Graham Arnold has shown across a couple of tournaments that he has one way of playing football, and that way of playing football is a style that does not suit our players, because our players are too good to be playing that style of football. So we need a manager who is willing to take risks, who's willing to play fast, expansive, open football, because our players are good enough to do that. And Graham Arnold, for whatever reason, either chooses not to play that style or can't play that style. And that's fine. But he cannot coach his team any longer if we want to go to where a lot of people think that we can go. That's all it is. That's all it is. And that's all it is. That's it. I'm going to take a quick break because 32 minutes. Speak about soccer is enough. And we're going to come back with some non-rubbish. Non-rubbish? We'll call it non-rubbish. I'll be back. Okay, we're back. And I don't want to... I'm now going to speak about things that aren't going to make me angry. Let's keep talking about Australian football. Let's touch on the A-League quickly. Because I want to speak on Mark Rudan's comments. So for those who didn't see, MacArthur played Western United. No, they didn't. MacArthur played Western Sydney on Sunday night. And MacArthur won the game 4-3 in the 96th minute or whatever it was, or like the 90th minute, with a goal from Jermaine that was over the line, or was it, depending on who you ask and depending on what angles you see. Obviously, there's no goal line technology in the A-League, because of course there isn't, but there's VAR, so well done on spending your money wisely there, Danny, even though he's not in charge anymore. And Marco Rudan, obviously, in that game, Western Sydney got a red card that was there, I reckon. Whereas Jermaine, who ended up scoring the winner, kicked out at one of Western Sydney's players before the other red card incident, and didn't get sent off. And Marco Rudan went off in a press conference and was like, this club has a stigma towards me and towards his club, and the league doesn't like this club, and it's a disgrace and all this stuff. Go seek out the press conference if you haven't. It's on Twitter, and I'm assuming it'll probably be on other platforms as well. But look, I'm not going to sit here and condone coaches abusing officials, or players abusing officials, because I think that's not good for the game. But Mark Rudan's press conference was a fucking pisser. It was hilarious. Like, it was It was all the rage that you feel after a game when your team's been robbed or when you feel like your team's been wronged. And it is just expelled in like beautifully aggressive but also articulate way from a psycho. It's great. It's compelling viewing. Like, compelling viewing. I encourage you all to go and seek it out. Even though the comments and the contents of it are pretty harsh, the way it's delivered is great, and the fact that he just storms out at the end of it is even better. So one of the highlights over the A-League weekend, even though Western Sydney fans probably aren't too happy about the result because they did get robbed, which isn't great, but is what it is. So yeah, that was just awesome. That was awesome kind of content. It was great. Yeah, I definitely implore you all to go and check that out. Because that was really, really funny content. Regardless, speaking on other A-League happenings, Central Coast beat Adelaide 4-0 in a convincing win. Theo Harris with a goal, Torres with two, and Reece with a penalty on the 90th minute. Adelaide struggling, lost their last two. Whereas Central Coast have, I think, not lost since October, or since November, I should say. Have not lost since November, have won, what, six out of the last seven. Their only draw came at the hands of Victory at Unite Round. They would have just played, actually, because they played 2 p.m. on a Tuesday, because it's a public holiday in New Zealand, I think. So they would have just played. I don't know if they've beaten Wellington or not, but I think they might. Probably not, considering that Wellington are pretty good. And funnily enough, having a top-of-the-table clash at a 2 p.m. on a Tuesday is just typical A-League, but there you go. Yeah. And Hal Torres with two. He's pretty good footballer, he is. Victory drew 1-1 in the most Victory game possible. I'm not even going to speak about that because I don't want to get angry. Perth won 4-2 against Melbourne City, which was great. The winning or the sealer in the 98th minute was good viewing. But yeah, overall, a pretty entertaining week of the A-League, so you can't really complain all too much. And of course, the MacArthur-Western Sydney game was great crack as well. Premier League, Arsenal won this morning, which is great for them. 3-1 win. Two calamitous goals, by the way. Gabriel's own goal that Saliba just decided not to fucking attack, which was weird. And then Martinelli's second goal, or the second goal for Arsenal, Martinelli's goal. Alisson just completely missed the ball, and then Trossard sealed it in the 92nd minute. So Arsenal closed that gap. Back down to 2 points. If City win their two games in hand, they will go equal in points with Liverpool. No, they will go 1 point ahead of Liverpool if they win their two games in hand. So it's well and truly a three-horse race right now, which is pretty interesting and pretty exciting for the league. So I still think Liverpool win it. I think this will drive them. This result will drive them. Will drive them even more. And finishing things up, I've got here Chelsea suck. We lost 4-2 to Wolves. That's all I want to speak on the topic because I will literally punch my camera and it'll break and I don't want to do it because watching that game got me so unbelievably cross. Cole Palmer is literally the only thing that's half decent about Chelsea at the moment and it's pretty sad. And there's a lot of players who aren't fit to wear the shirt. There's some coach issues which needs to be addressed. There's some board issues which need to be addressed. A lot going wrong with Chelsea at the moment, which is not good. And then I want to speak on Kobbie Mainoo because he's just come from nowhere. He scored the winner against Wolves on midweek. Played well again on the weekend. It's really funny how for the longest time, like he's only 18. It's actually pretty funny. He's only 18 years old. It's really funny how United have been desperately crying out for an aggressive, ball-playing, progressive defensive midfielder who can break forward, who can break in between the lines, who can progress the ball forward for the longest time, right? Ever since they've I was going to say ever since I lost Roy Keane, but it's after that, right? And Roy Keane isn't even that player, I should say. Jesus Christ. But yeah, United have been crying out for a half-decent progressive midfielder for the longest time. They've tried player after player after player. Fred didn't work, McTominay didn't work, Eriksen hasn't worked, Van der Beek didn't work. And then all of a sudden, this 18-year-old kid from their academy comes through, plays a couple of good games, scores a winner in the 98th minute or whatever it was against Wolves, and has all of a sudden become a fan favourite. I hesitate to give United a lot of credit, but Kobbie Mainoo is a pretty good footballer. Like, he's pretty good. He's good. And I really hope United don't ruin him, because he is a player that is an archetype of player that I really like watching, that like aggressive defensive midfielder, but can also break forward and play as like a little bit of a box-to-box midfielder. Very technically gifted, but also not afraid to stick his leg in into a tackle as well. And he took his goal against Wolves fantastically as well. So I really hope United don't ruin him, because I think he's a fantastic player. And I'm not going to say build their team around him, because he's only 18 and he's only played like 8 games. But if he can mature and progress and just keep slowly getting better, in a couple of years' time, he should be their midfield fulcrum. He really should be. And they shouldn't look to make profit off him, unlike a certain club in London that wears blue, makes profit off their academy players. They should be looking to have him be a 15 to 20-year staple of their club, because he's good enough to do that. If he progresses in the way that he's currently progressing, he'll be good enough to do that. So, yeah, I really like Kobbie Mainoo. I just wanted to point that out there. But, yeah, there we go. I think that is all for today's episode. Apologies, it was very Socceroos heavy. Next week, we'll be back with a well-rounded chat about football, because there won't be any Socceroos to speak about, but which is good. Obviously, there's Prem midweek, as well as on the weekend, Victory play on Saturday afternoon against MacArthur, which is really good. I'm actually going to be near MacArthur. I'm flying up to Sydney for an event, and I'll be at MacArthur, like the surrounding areas. And it's funny enough that we play MacArthur, but it's at home instead of away, which is really fucking annoying. Because if it was away, I would have gone. I just so would have gone. But, oh well, can't win them all. And then a lot of Premier League action on the weekend as well. Chelsea play on Tuesday at 7 a.m. So I won't actually be covering Chelsea next week. Well, I will be, because we play Villa, but not on the weekend's games. So there you go. But yes, thank you very much for watching another episode of the Two Foot Tackle podcast. Make sure you subscribe and do all the things that I said in the beginning. It would mean more than the world. But yes, see you guys next week. Stay well, stay safe. Chat soon. Goodbye.